This podcast is sponsored by The Knowledge Website, a digital digest that cuts through the noise. Brought to you by the founder of The Week, John Connell. Every day, The Knowledge gives you all you need to know in just 5 minutes, delivered straight to your inbox or to your app. Sign up for free at theknowledge.com to get the most interesting ideas, the stories that matter, and the quirkiest anecdotes, all expertly curated.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth, broadcasting from Parliament, which is in recess. But despite this, one cabinet minister is making waves today. We've had Michael Gove give some interesting comments on vaccines and ultimately, as we've discussed previously on the podcast, the fact that uptake is lower than the government would like, particularly in younger age groups. And Michael Gove has branded those who refuse the vaccine selfish. James, talk us through those comments.
So Michael Gove is one of the most hawkish people in government on the whole question of the use of certification to access certain venues. And what he was saying on a visit in Glasgow was, if you don't have a medical reason why you can't take the vaccine and you won't take the vaccine, he's arguing that that is basically selfish because it exposes, because the vaccine not only protects yourself, but other people. And I think one of the particular reasons he's making this argument is the government is most worried about these 3 million 18 to 30 year olds who haven't even had their first dose yet. And the problem is, it is quite hard to persuade those 3 million 18 to 30 year olds that they are kind of high risk of dying or ending up in hospital from COVID, because frankly, they're not. You know, I mean, they obviously would be safer from that if they were vaccinated, but their risk of that is relatively low. So I think he's trying to come up with a kind of social responsibility argument for what they should do. But, you know, it all follows on the heels of his, you know, idea floated that, you know, you have to be vaccinated to stay in the university halls of residence and attend lectures. Or Boris Johnson saying that, you know, you won't be allowed to go into a nightclub unless you're double vaccinated.
Tory conference at this rate.
Yeah, I think that's slightly less appealing to the 18 to 30 demographic, possibly. But you just see it stepping up there. I mean, there's an interesting question here now, which I think raises some of the kind of philosophical problems and challenges that to a liberal society COVID has thrown up. Now, on the one hand, part of me thinks, you know, how can you be selfish about what you choose to put or not put into your own body? But I think there is a difference with a disease such as COVID that obviously, and the government doesn't want to use this phrase, but obviously we are trying to achieve kind of herd immunity through vaccination. And if people who are able to take the vaccine refuse to do so, they make achieving that more difficult. And so I think there is some justification to saying that, you know, if you don't have a medical reason for not doing so, or if you're not, for example, I think, you know, vaccine hesitancy among pregnant women, given how much the advice has changed about whether pregnant women should or shouldn't take the vaccine, is, I think, highly understandable. But I think for healthy people who have no medical reason for their objection, you clearly have not only an obligation to your own health, but I think this is one of the challenging things to a kind of liberal individualistic society. You also do, I think, have some obligations to the broader society around you. And if you getting vaccinated would help that broader society get back to normal, I think you can make a case that that is in some ways your responsibility.
And James, what's the state of play within the Conservative Party and government on this? Because we're hearing that before that announcement Boris Johnson made about nightclubs, there's quite a lot of internal opposition from ministers. You've spoken to some, I've spoken to some who are not comfortable with their party really backing vaccine passports. You've had a senior MP warning that vaccine passports could spark the first Tory split in nearly 200 years. So is this exaggeration? How much, I think, opposition is Boris Johnson going to get if he does try and push this through on Labour votes?
If Boris Johnson tried to push through the form of the policy that he's talking about for nightclubs, the only double vaccination, only that would allow you entry, I think it is pretty much guaranteed he would have to rely on Labour votes to get that through. 30 Tory MPs voted against requiring care home workers to be vaccinated. Now, it's clearly more reasonable to require care home workers to be vaccinated than it is to require young people going to a nightclub to be vaccinated. And so I think it suggests the rebellion would be bigger than that. I think there might be a bit less opposition on the Tory benches for certification. So you're basically saying, essentially, you can either be double vaccinated or you can take a test. And the thing, actually, when you talk to a lot of ministers, I think a lot of ministers are in that kind of space, that they are happy with making life a little bit more difficult for people. So that vaccination, for those who won't get vaccinated, you know, saying that the vaccinated won't have to quarantine, won't have to self-isolate, you know, wouldn't have to take a test to do certain things. But I think kind of full-on coercion is something that a lot of Tories are uncomfortable with. I also think that, you know, there is this question that how much is this actual policy coming down the track? How much of this is an attempt to get people saying, oh, I better go and get my vaccine, so I can't get my vaccine, I can't do this, I can't do that. And I think one of the surprises in government was, I think they thought the changes to travel quarantine for double vaccinated people and self-isolation for double vaccinated people would cause a bit more of an uptick in the numbers. You know, the first dose numbers at the moment are bobbing around on the 7-day average at just a touch under 40,000, which is really quite low, considering that, you know, there is far more supply than that.
And I suppose, James, you're talking about where it's actually going to be brought in, and there's a question of, will it be needed? Because you've heard from Neil Ferguson, one of the advisors to the government, who I think when it comes to the spectrum on which you should hear what the scientific advisors believe, he seemed to be very much on the dovish end, often, well, actually quite recently predicting that it was inevitable to reach 100,000 cases a day, maybe even 200,000. That now looks possible, but that isn't the current trend we're seeing. And he's come out this morning and said that by the end of September, October, we will be looking at a very different world in terms of the UK and the pandemic, suggesting that the pandemic could be quite close to over. Is what's that based on?
In short, there's fall in cases. That you know, there is increasing signs that this wave may have peaked, and that you might be seeing a kind of decline in English cases akin to the decline in Scottish cases, which has been prolonged and sustained. Now, we're only a few days into this decline in cases in England, and I mean, there's a certain uncertainty about whether what is causing it. I think there are two particularly realistic reasons. One is schools are now out, and schools were accounting for a lot of cases. And secondly, that when we were at the height of kind of pingdemic fears, that people adjusted their behaviours and may well have been more cautious about going out because they wanted to go on holiday, or they had a friend's wedding to go to, or thing of big events that they didn't wish to miss, and so that they stayed at home more than they otherwise would have done so. I don't know what you feel, and this is obviously anecdotal rather than data, but it doesn't feel like London is a dramatically different place post the great reopening than it was before. You don't notice bars and restaurants as you walk past them being particularly full compared to where they were on July the 18th, say. And so I think the public have not responded to kind of freezing day by kind of bacchanalian festivities in totally crowded indoor places. And I think there's one of the other factors here is the weather has been better. And we know that COVID finds it much, much more difficult to spread outdoors. So if we're in a situation where people could easily do their socialising outdoors, that is one of the things that makes it hard for COVID to spread.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big easing was not 19th of July, even delayed 21st of June. It was the one before that. It was stage three of the roadmap where indoor socialising, yes, in groups of six, became possible. And we went from sitting in the rain outside, attempting to socialise in what wasn't the best spring for it, to being able to move indoors. And therefore, you can start to see how the better weather would be having an impact where, it's less that condition. But I think in terms of, I suppose, as you say, socialising, if you look at, for example, Latitude Music Festival, which happened at the weekend, really busy, but nice weather, so thousands of people, but socialising outdoors. And I think what's going to be interesting is, obviously, we've heard lots about nightclubs, and the government's initially a bit worried about that. But, you know, we're now facing showers for a few weeks, so I think we're going to test some of these theories as, people do move indoors. And then I think it gets to almost, I think people don't want to believe the pandemic's about to be over in case they're just proven to be wrong yet again. But if this is weather dependent, obviously there's more vaccinations coming up the track, but there are questions if you have a high number of unvaccinated young people, some people get the vaccine despite being double jabbed, as to what happens when we all try and socialise normally James just knocking over his coffee. What happens when we all try and socialise normally as soon as we get to autumn? Have we got enough protection by that point that the fact it will be largely indoors is something that can withstand? Because there is a reason they wanted the summer exit wave. So I feel there's lots of hope in government, but I think one of the reasons, and you've heard from Boris Johnson today and others, that they keep saying, you know, we're not out of this yet, is there are still quite a few unknowns, no matter how tempting it is to think we aren't on the way out. James, I've just mentioned what Boris Johnson said today, and he's also said some other things. Now, this was a crime speech that we mentioned yesterday on the podcast, and he had his official lines, but something else he said that is, I think, dominating the coverage. Can you go into the details?
I think you talked about people being guilty of antisocial behaviour in kind of high-vis chain gangs. Now, this is obviously imagery. I don't think they are literally going to be chained to each other. I think that would be in violation of about a huge number of human rights laws. But I think it's an attempt to try and suggest that community punishments aren't necessarily soft, and also an attempt to kind of channel public anger about this kind of low-level criminality. I think one of the things that Tony Blair got so right in his emphasis on social behaviour was that, you know, there's sometimes a tendency to think, oh, it's the big crimes that matter. You know, this relatively low-level stuff is not that important, but it does make a huge difference to people's quality of life, and it determines whether people think, and I think this is important, that the authorities have control or not. I mean, today is a clear Tory attempt. Basically, they've seen Starmer trying to move on to this crime turf. They've also seen public concern about crime beginning to tick up. You talk to people who do focus groups and they say it has risen. I mean, partly because the pandemic has led to some more instances of antisocial behaviour, with schools being out and the like. And so I think there is a desire to show that the government is trying to deal with this. Now, the problem for the government is that this rhetoric is quite easy, and Boris Johnson and Pradeep Patel are very good at doing the tough on crime rhetoric. The question is whether you can actually manage to deliver on that, whether people notice antisocial behaviour being dealt more strictly or going down, and whether people feel that the problems of criminality in their community are being solved or not.
And James, on that, do you think Priti Patel's helpful? Because I thought it was interesting at the weekend that you had the Mail on Sunday, which I think tends to be fairly supportive of politicians like Priti Patel, was quite critical of her and her track record in that role. But yet, I remember even, you know, if you think back to the 2019 election, Priti Patel was seen as very important by everyone in Number 10 because they think that she just sounds like she's talking tough. And I just wonder, do you think the record of what's going on is beginning to undermine that, or actually, no, she's still very powerful for that reason?
I think Priti Patel is the toughest talking Home Secretary in the generation, which, given how tough Home Secretaries tend to talk, is quite something. But I think that tough talk only gets you so far. I think, as you say, once you've been in the job for a while, you've had a chance to introduce your own legislation to deal with problems, then I think people will start to say, well, hang on a second, you said you were going to solve this problem, whether it's crime, antisocial behaviour, or migrant small boats, and people will then start to judge you against the record, not just the rhetoric. This is the challenge of Priti Patel, is that, you know, she's coming to the end of that period when, as Home Secretary, she can say, things are going to be different now, I'm going to get tough. She's been in the job for 2 years, and people will now begin to say, well, hang on a second, why hasn't this changed? So I think she's probably got another year of being able to say to people, look, I am toughening up the system, I'm toughening up the rules, I'm changing the way things are done. But I think next summer, people will be saying, well, hang on a second, you talked very tough, you said you would solve these problems, and they haven't been solved. I mean, that is the danger for her.
Thank you, James, and thank you for listening.